everyone. Welcome back to Doing It, the sex and relationships podcast where sex has never been so nerdy, with me, your host, Hannah Witten. My guests this week have been highly, highly requested by listeners for ages, and I'm so excited to finally get them on the podcast. This episode is with the fabulous Jessica and Claudia Kellgren-Fozard. Jessica is a YouTuber and content creator who shares her experiences as a chronically ill and disabled lesbian in a fun, uplifting, and educational way. Jessica is an advocate for both the disability and LGBTQ plus communities, often making videos with her wife, Claudia. Last year, Jessica and Claudia welcomed their lovely baby Rupert into the world, and so I wanted to get them on the show to talk all about parenting as lesbians and with disability. We had a really interesting chat, hearing them reflect on how being disabled actually has a lot of benefits to Jessica's parenting, such as drawing on her knowledge of sign language as a deaf person to teach their baby, and on the flip side, how becoming a parent has helped Jessica with her disabilities through building greater physical strength. We also spoke about why Claudia had an elective cesarean to make it easier for Jessica to be able to be present at the birth, and how the temporary disability of recovering from her cesarean gave Claudia a new perspective on the restrictions and frustrations Jessica experiences with her disabilities. It was really interesting hearing them discuss how gendered parenting roles don't come into play as a lesbian couple, and why not to say, whose baby is it really, to lesbian parents. We also spoke about how ostracizing it can be for Jessica when mum gatherings focus a lot on breastfeeding chat, and whether they felt the healthcare environments they visited for the pregnancy were inclusive to them as lesbians. I loved hearing Jessica and Claudia talk about the love and support they have for one another and the way they respect each other's needs whilst raising a baby together. And I really hope that you enjoy listening to this episode too. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram, which is at doingitpodcast. If you like this episode, please give us a rating and review over on iTunes and Spotify. It's really appreciated. And here are, as requested by many of you, the lovely Jessica and Claudia. Welcome, Jessica and Claudia. So lovely to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having us.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with you, do you want to kind of like intro yourself so people know who is talking?
Sure. Hi, I'm Jessica and I'm a YouTuber. I make videos about disability, chronic illness and LGBTQ plus issues, often joined by my wonderful wife, Claudia.
Yeah, hi. I'm kind of like your sidekick.
My partner.
More than a sidekick.
Yeah.
We also have a joint Instagram account at Jessie and Claude, along with our own personal Instagrams. Mine's at Jessica Out of the Closet.
Mine's at CloudFoz, which has a really old handle, but I just can't remember to change it.
I like it.
It's my nickname at school was Cloud, so...
Yeah,
it really doesn't go getting anyone who knew her as a child to call her anything except Cloud. They really struggle, like they trip over it a lot. And we have a lovely 8-month-old called Rupert.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to get you on the podcast to talk about, obviously. I mean, you two are incredible, and then also you have this child, so it's like an incredible family. And obviously, Jessica, you talk a lot about disability on your YouTube channel. And I'm curious if you could talk about how having disabilities has impacted your parenting and maybe what some of the benefits of that have been.
Yes, I actually made a video about this recently, about the benefits of being a disabled parent, because I think there are actually loads and loads of benefits. People often say, or said to me before I became a parent, like, wow, you know, really? That seems like it's going to be really tough. Like, oh, I don't know, disabilities and parenting, really difficult. However, I think there are so many things that I've brought to the situation just because of my disabilities that have been massive bonuses. For instance, I'm deaf and I use sign language. I also rely on my hearing aids and lip reading a lot. And so we've taught Rupert sign language, and he now communicates with us through sign language. He's 8 months old. He can't really speak.
He definitely said more.
Yeah. So he kind of makes, she can do the sounds. What sounds do you do?
Well, ma was kind of more.
Yeah, there you go. But he can sign. So he can say that
he's
say
dada, which is really annoying. And it just proves that it's not actually ever, babies are never actually saying dad.
Yeah. Because what could he be referring to?
All the fathers out there, it's not actually you. And he can sign when he needs milk. He can sign to tell us that he'd like a nappy change. He can sign each of our individual sign names for mummy and for mama, which is really sweet that he's just recently started doing mum. So I'm like, sorry, I'm like,
yeah, he's saying my name.
It's me.
Jessica spends like every minute of the day going, mama, mama, mama. And I'm like, can you say sometimes mummy? So he learns both. Like, it's really biased. Mummy has a little bit of ma in it anyway, so does it?
I think it's fine.
Yeah. That's so cool that you're teaching him sign language. I'm so curious about like what is known about teaching babies sign language, like, because he's hearing, isn't he? And so like what the benefits are, and like, is it something that's like useful and easy, like especially like from such a young age?
Well, I go to a baby sing and sign class, which are quite popular around the whole of the UK, and it's basically teaching your babies basic signs like nappy and milk and hungry and all those sort of, you know, things that they need to learn. But some of them are like not accurate BSL signs, are they? They're kind of weird baby signs. And also a lot of the parents, as soon as their babies are actually able to start talking, they just give up on the sign language aspect of it. They kind of just use it as a tool pre-verbal as opposed to a second language.
Yeah, the benefits of being able to do sign language with a baby is that they don't need to cry to tell you that they need something done for them. They can just communicate with you. And also you're able to talk to your child. I can talk to my child and he can express things to me. He can tell me how he feels, which is a wonderful thing. Babies are so much more capable than we give them credit for. Just because he's 8 months old doesn't mean that he can't tell me how he feels or know that he's hungry, know that he needs his nappy changed, or which of his parents he'd like a hug from.
Yeah, it's giving you access to like his whole inner world.
Yeah, and then allowing him to share it, whereas he might not otherwise have the tools.
Yeah. It definitely makes parenting easier when you know what they need and want.
Yeah, we don't have to do the like, oh, he's crying.
Which thing is it?
I'll just go down the list. Oh, no.
You're like, oh, he's signing for a nappy change. So got this. Oh, I hadn't thought about it like that. I'm like, oh, yeah. it's a cheat sheet. What does my baby need?
So that's one aspect, obviously. And then other things would be that just from having been disabled myself, I have a condition that means I tend to lose parts of my body, but it's not like I kind of take them off and put them down and walk away from them. My condition means that I paralyze limbs, and that can be for months at a time. And then obviously once they come back, they are very weak and I have to relearn to do things. So when I was a teenager, I paralyzed both of my arms for a year and a half. And then I had to relearn how to write, how to hold a spoon, how to feed myself, how to do up buttons, all of the things that my child is going to learn to do. So I have a lot of patience with him. I have a lot of understanding of the frustration of I'm trying to pick up this spoon of food and get it into my mouth. Oh my goodness, this is really difficult. Something I want to do. How do I do that?
It's like, I know the theory, but I can't seem to do it in practice.
Yeah.
You have a lot more patience than I do when it comes to feeding time, especially. When it's like the fifth spoon drop, I'm like, I'm done. Just take over.
Yeah, but I understand that why it's so important that he is able to do these things himself. So I'm really I really wanted to kind of champion helping him to do things rather than just kind of like, I'm going to do this for you. I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah. Here you are doing it. I'm so proud of you. Watching you do this yourself. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just seeing those tiny little challenges that he overcomes and feeling so proud of him and knowing really firsthand what that feels like, because I think we forget when we're so much older than like what it feels like to stand up for the first time. But I mean, I hurt my back. What, how many months ago was that? Well, 5 months ago?
Yeah, when he was like 3 months.
When he was 3 months, I had to be on bed rest for 4 weeks.
I think it was like nearly, I thought it was more like six.
Nearly 6 weeks.
Felt like an eternity.
Yes. Felt like an eternity. Yeah, so I kind of paralyzed my legs. Drama.
Yeah.
And that was kind of awful. And the joy of being able to be like, I can sit up again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I can stand up again. Wow. That was really recent for me. So I can really relate to that when I see it in his little face.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And it's kind of like a silver lining, I guess, to a crappy situation of paralyzing your legs.
Yeah.
One plus of you being bedbound was that you had to read him loads and loads of stories, because it's one of the only things you could do with him. So he spent a lot of time reading stories. Well, you read the stories. And now he loves books. It's like one of his favourite things.
Oh, goodness. Yes. We do books a lot.
Like twice a day.
Books are one of his big, big things. He's very much into them. If we don't do books at the time that we're meant to do books, he will die for books.
Like, he's on a schedule.
Yeah.
Has to do them.
Yeah. I'm also curious to learn if you think that, like, becoming a parent has helped you with your disability in any way.
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think it's definitely helped my strength.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyone who has a baby soon learns that, like, bingo wings no more. Like, you were lifting that chair all the time.
Yeah. So before we had him, I worked with a personal trainer twice a week who also had worked with people who'd been injured and elderly clients before who kind of knew a bit about restorative work. Don't just go straight in with someone who's like, yes, we're going to train to the max.
That's oh my God, imagine.
When you have a body that's a bit out there. So I really wanted to be able to carry my baby around. I said, this is really important to me. I need to be able to do this. Claudia's having a cesarean. I've got to be able to do stuff for her and for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I did a lot. And then after he was born, I was like, oh, you kind of don't need to do strength training because you carry that baby around and he grows every single day at quite a rate, like an exponential rate. That kid is heavy.
But I guess you're kind of like getting used to it, like, because your strength is building as he grows.
Yeah, so gradual build up, Unless you give birth to like a hefter, then it's like, you know.
Then it's good luck. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I was big though. I was 9.5 pounds. My mother won't let me forget it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is big baby. You mentioned about Claudia's cesarean. Claudia, I wondered, like, could you talk about why you decided to have a elective cesarean? That's something that's been like floated to me as an option because of my like previous surgeries. And so I'm curious about your experience and like how you came to that decision.
Yeah. So like for me, before I even got pregnant, I wasn't that keen on a sort of natural vaginal birth. One reason being I was at my sister's birth. That would be weird. She's an older sister. My nephew's birth of my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a really straightforward water bath birth. And it was like all lovely. Like she describes it as magical and one of the most amazing moments of her life. And I'm sure it was, but I was there and I wasn't like all hormonal. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think I really want to go through that. Like, it doesn't seem that much fun. And you could just have a cesarean and have the same kind of outcome. So for me, I've always been very much like, I don't know, like, I don't know, not really kind of wanting that. I don't know.
It wasn't something you felt like you needed.
I didn't feel
you weren't
like
called to be like, I want to birth a child from my vagina.
I really wanted to carry a baby. Like I wanted to be pregnant, but I wasn't that bothered about how the baby came out. I just wanted it to come out the most effective, safest way. And in my mind, that with a medical background as well, and having spoken to my sister and my dad about it, like my dad is a retired anaesthetist, so he was done a lot of cesareans, like gave a lot of the spinals for it. And my sister's a pediatrician, so they have like both of their opinions. And from a medical aspect, they both said, my dad actually said, like, I think it's actually safer to have a cesarean because there's less risks, planned cesarean, this is, than, than an emergency one. And I think from Jessica's point of view, Jessica was also really anxious about potential risks of natural birth, weren't you?
I think it was that I didn't feel like if she went into labor at any time, I was like, I can't promise that I'm going to be able to be there. Like,
because there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah. I have such an uncertain condition, but at the same time, I need to manage it by keeping to quite a regular schedule. So I need like my 8 hours of sleep, for instance. And if she goes into labor at 3 a.m., I'm like, I take really heavy medication. I don't know if my medication will let me wake up at 3 a.m. come to hospital and stay awake 3 days while you go through labor. But I want to be there for you.
Yeah, very much, you know? Like, I felt like the birth wasn't just mine, it was Jessica's as well. You know, it's a moment that you share together. And I didn't want it to be, it was much more likely that if I had a natural vaginal birth, that, like you say, there's lots more uncertainties. And would Jessica actually have the stamina to be there with me? And if she, even if she's there, is she going to be a present 100% at the moment of birth? And then,
or am I going to be crushed out in the corner?
Yeah, and then after birth, is she going to help? Is she going to enjoy it? So, like, it was like a family decision that actually a cesarean was the way we wanted to bring our baby into the world.
Yeah, and I guess, like, you have the date for it. So, Jessica, that means that you, like, you have that date in the diary, and so you can make sure that you can do as much as possible to, like, manage your condition in the ways that you know how leading up to that, I guess.
Yeah, so I managed, I sort of stopped work a week beforehand. We were very conscious of not doing anything that would potentially like risk an injury beforehand.
No, I mean, gardening.
We did not want to be doing the like middle of the night.
No,
oh
gardening.
My God.
I was like mowing the lawn the day before the C-section.
Well, for you,
yeah,
it's fine.
Risk an injury for me. She would be doing whatever she wanted. Right. But no, we were like, we're not going to do that. 3 a.m. running up and down the house. Oh my God, where's the bag? And then like, here I am. Oh no, I've slipped. Oh, I'm going down the stairs. Whoops, I'm paralyzed. Now what?
We're like, oh, the nice thing about knowing the date is we actually got to choose the date. So the doctor basically gave us, he was like, do you want the 4th or the 7th? And we were like, the 4th has a much better ring to it.
Yeah, that's so true. You get to pick your kid's birthday, because my birthday is 19/2/92, which just is so lovely to say. I love it. And yeah, other people not so lucky with like how it rolls off the tongue, their birthdays, but
yeah, you really were obsessed with having a baby in 2020, weren't you? Because you just really wanted it to be like...
I was like, 2020, that sounds great. That year did not go well.
I think you wanted it to be like 20th of February, like 2020.
Yeah.
But now you're glad that wasn't the case, so...
Yeah.
Get pregnant until quite far into that year.
Yeah, our baby's going to be born in, obviously, 2022. But so they could be born on the 22nd.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, so it'd be like potentially 22/4/22. I don't know. We'll see.
That's nice, though.
We'll workshop it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like your name, like Hannah. Like it's like backwards. Ooh. 22/4/22.
Oh yeah.
We'll see. Let's put the prediction now. Like we'll see.
Would you give your child a palindrome name?
Oh.
Palindrome name.
Are there probably other ones out there that are probably like shorter. Like obviously Anna is another one. I'm not like connected to my name being a palindrome.
Hannah Junior.
Oh my God.
Girl or boy, Hannah Junior works fine.
Exactly. There's an actor called John Hannah. Like Hannah is a surname. And I was like, what? I never heard Hannah as a surname before, but yeah. Hey, I'm also interested in hearing about your kind of like pregnancy experience, Claudia, especially because like my first trimester, and now that I'm like in my third, it is what I would call a pretty disabling experience. And as an inter-abled couple, like how did you like navigate suddenly like Claudia, you know, the one who's normally able-bodied, going through this huge physical change that can change like what you're able to do potentially and like how you're feeling and like how your body is reacting to things?
Yeah, well, I would say my pregnancy overall was actually pretty good. I felt I didn't have any morning sickness or nauseousness. I was quite lucky in that sense.
Very
lucky. I did have really bad sciatica in the first trimester. And the main thing that was really bad was between sort of the first and halfway through the second trimester, I had this really awful, I mean, there's no way other to explain it,
way to
like,
say this.
Really awful, like electric pain up my anus.
Wow.
Yeah, that happened every morning. It would just come on like so sporadically, and it would last from it would last either a few minutes to potentially an hour.
Oh my God.
But it was like disabling. Like, I couldn't even move out of the bed. Mm-hmm. I had to like ring up work and not come in until later if it happened. And I went to the doctor on my birthday. He asked me to come in, and then he did a rectal exam. And then was
on my birthday.
And then he was
happy
like,
birthday.
And he was just like, "Yeah, you've got hemorrhoids." I didn't. Like, he just
didn't.
But anyway, I went along with it. And and it carried on. And I don't know what it was. Then I went to a chiropractor, didn't I? And they said it was my pelvis was moving. You know, basically it just changes shape. I don't know if you've noticed, but your bum shape like literally changes. And you can't get your jeans past your legs. Like, well, I haven't even put any weight on my legs. Why are my jeans not going up any higher?
I haven't noticed, but Dan did say that my bum was looking bigger the other day. And I was like, well, isn't everything just getting a bit bigger? So.
It's really interesting because her bum is like a triangle shape before, and then it became
square.
Sorry, darling. And then it became like a square shape, and now it's gone back to being a triangle shape.
I mean, it's kind of scary that like literally your body is
amazing,
twisting out and like
human body is just stunning.
Yeah, and I used to be really inflexible. I'm quite flexible now.
Yeah,
ooh,
I mean,
all those looser joints,
obviously.
Yeah.
But very interesting.
So yeah, no. So during those times, I would say
20 weeks.
The nice thing about that was Jessica works from home, so I always had someone around to like help me if I was having that kind of moment. We were having building work though, so that wasn't so fun. And then once that passed, I would say the rest of my pregnancy was pretty smooth. The third trimester was probably the best I felt. I was like in the garden all the time, like
mowing the lawn, doing handiwork.
I stopped work at 28 weeks, which was
really listen to anyone when they were like, "Slow down."
Well, yeah,
do you want to have a rest?
Because it was the pandemic, and I had a frontline job as a dentist, and I personally didn't really feel that comfortable working, even though I'd had one of the vaccines. But still, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to take early maternity.
Fair enough.
So I guess that's probably another reason I really enjoyed my third trimester.
You're just like, just chilling. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think kind of like that experience of pregnancy, but then I guess also like recovering from your cesarean give you any like a different kind of insight into Jessica's experiences with disabilities?
Yeah. Recovering from cesarean was way more debilitating than pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I would say pregnancy for me, as I said, was quite a nice experience for myself. But yeah, the cesarean recovery, which took about 6 weeks for me to properly get back to my normal self-ish, was more difficult. I think for the first week or two, maybe the first week, I'm probably being generous, I was expecting to feel like I did, you know, basically like I'm just going to sit on this chair, not do anything, allow Jessica and my really good friend Lily, who's my mum's best friend, who came to look after us for a week, to just basically like wait on me hand and foot, and that's fine. But after a week of that, I was like really bored and just wanted to get up and do what I normally do.
Yeah.
So I would say I did have that kind of, could suddenly see what it was like for Jessica to feel so frustratingly restricted when mentally and emotionally, you know, I wanted to get up and do things, and
you
I wasn't able to.
We're not a good patient. No.
No. Jessica with her years of practice.
It's understandable. It's understandable. It was your first time at the wheel.
Are you there like giving notes like, okay, so next time, like, here's how you can be a better patient?
You had to keep reminding me, like, you carried our baby for 9 months, just like chill out. Like,
next time, do not expect your body to heal in 7 days.
Yeah, no, that's not how it works.
And you were like, what? It's been a week now. I should be able to do all of the things. Why can't I carry everything?
Yeah, I would say that whilst I was recovering, there were a few moments when I was like, maybe I should have just gone through a natural birth, because I was quite envious of the women who had smooth kind of births and like were literally walking around the park the next day with their buggies. And that was like not an option for me.
But then on the other hand,
there are people who had bad births and were just in the same situation that I was, but also had had the trauma of a birth.
But also then I was there with you, able to do things.
Yeah.
So the way that
we were really
did
lucky
it,
as well, that you don't just have 2 weeks paternity or something like that. You had like, Jessica took off 2 months, didn't you?
Yeah. And the way that we did it meant that I was able to really be there and look after you.
Because she knew I was having a cesarean, she had planned to have that time off. Whereas if we hadn't planned that, maybe she wouldn't have allowed herself that much time off work. And so that was another plus, really.
Yeah. So you kind of started touching on it there. And I'm interested to talk about like gender roles and parenting, and whether like as lesbian parents, have you found yourselves kind of like, I don't know, like doing certain roles, or is it purely just like based on like, well, Claudia's the one that like carried the baby and has the boobs. Do you think you're kind of like free from a lot of the gender roles that maybe like a straight couple would find themselves kind of under?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we more, I mean, you can correct me if you think differently, but I think we are just like, we just do what we both are, where our strengths are.
I think we're driven the same way that we have been with our marriage, where we do what we're good at personality wise, rather than looking at it
as gender roles. As I guess we wouldn't look at gender roles.
But then why would we look at gender? Yeah, we both got, oh yeah, both girls. We forget that we're lesbians all the time. We're like, wait, isn't everyone else a lesbian?
Because you're like, this is our normal.
Yeah, we just forget that we're different. so we pretty much share things out based on, like, I'm good at reading stories. I'm good at nappy changes.
You're more patient with meal times.
So I do that. Mm-hmm. Claudia does breastfeeding.
I do like food production. Like I provide the milk and I make all the food, and then Jessica gives it when
the
she can.
The food distribution.
Yeah. You sometimes bottle fed at the beginning because that was something she wanted to do. But he doesn't have a bottle anymore.
So. No, he started rejecting bottles. So.
When I was recovered from my C-section, I was so keen to get up on my feet and like go do things like around the house. So Jessica would literally come with like, chasing me around the garden with Rupert. Can you feed this hungry baby? I don't have to move.
I'm just like, oh, I'd be like, I can do everything for him except feed him. Can you feed him? Lead him?
Oh
and
my goodness!
Like, oh, I am busy with these leads.
My other children.
Currently Claudia is still kind of just finishing off her maternity leave, which means that I'm working, and so she looks after him. Well, I don't know, it feels weird to say looks after him, but she
parents
with him. She's not like, no one looks after him, you kid. She's with him whilst I'm working, and then the rest of the time we're pretty much 50-50.
Yeah, we try and get a good balance of, like, Jessica kind of does the, like, morning story, gets some change for the day. I basically take him out or do whatever with him for the day. And then at 5 p.m. she's going to finish work. And then she helps him get dinner, and then we do bath together. So,
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I asked this is just because obviously, like, my partner is a man, and in terms of like our personalities, we do tend to kind of like fall into like stereotypical gender roles. And I'm always just like so resistant to it. And I'm like, why do we have to be like this? And always like questioning it of like, wait, is this, is this intentional, or is this something that we've just kind of like fallen into? And I'm constantly like second guessing like everything.
It's like harder for you then, because you are different sexes, like you say, you can think, oh, are we like doing a gender role for us? We don't think that, even if we are doing it.
But then like people assume that because I'm the girly one, I must be the one that's given birth. So if they see us together,
okay, yeah.
Like, I would quite often at the start, people would be like, oh, your baby. Oh, like, how old is he? And we'd be like, oh, he's 6 weeks old. And then people would look at me and be like, oh,
how?
He's 6 weeks old. Yeah. And I'm like,
they'd be like, wow, I never looked like that when I had a 6 week old baby. And then I'm like next to her in my joggy bum.
Like, maybe it was me.
Like, do not judge people based on their size and appearance.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be like, oh no, it was my wife. Please judge her appearance.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's actually a really interesting point. Like even them getting it right is still just like a weird comment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, just don't.
The weird thing is like the amount of people that stared down at my belly when they asked, like if they saw I had a young baby or pushing around with the buggy, they'd like, look, maybe it was because we were together. Maybe they're trying to work out which one of us gave birth. It was really weird, anyway.
Yeah.
People love to try and guess, like, whose baby is it really?
You made that video about like things not to say to lesbian parents, and that was like one of them, wasn't it? Like, what are some of the other things that are on that list?
Oh my God.
Oh,
who's the dad?
Why did you choose to carry it? There's a certain way people say like.
Oh yeah. So people often ask me like, why didn't you carry the baby? But just like flat out, why didn't you carry the baby?
Ooh.
And then I'm like, do I lie to you or do I tell you the truth, which is that due to my medical issues, I can't carry a baby, which I guess makes me technically infertile. Fun. Bet you're really happy you asked that now, aren't you?
Yeah, because it's such really a personal awkward question. And it's like, unless you're prepared for like any answer, like do not be asking that.
Just don't.
You're kind of used to that kind of intrusion because people ask you all the time, like, oh, what's wrong with your leg? Or why can't you do that? Why in your wheelchair?
Mm. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get that all the time. Or they'll just get, whenever I say what my job is and I'm like, oh, I make videos about disabilities on YouTube because I have a disability. And then they're always like, what's wrong with you? Weird way to phrase that.
That is such a weird phrasing.
Just really, really, really put that out there, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Good.
Fantastic. You mentioned one of the other ones. It's like, who's the dad?
Yeah.
As well.
God, the amount of people, mainly the older generation, like our parents' generation, the amount of times you have to correct them, that's the donor, when they're like, oh, well, you know, the father this, the father that, like, the donor.
Father or dad, like, assumes that there's a relationship there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's just not the case. This kind of like speaks to another question that actually somebody had on Instagram. Somebody asked, have you felt excluded from mum/parenting spaces due to being disabled or also due to being two mums?
Personally, no, because actually, like, well, one, we live in Brighton, which is a very gay-centred, friendly city.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think, if anything, from my experience of going to like play groups and mum groups and doing NCT, actually it would be probably the fathers or, you know, male parents that would feel more excluded or like outside-ish, because everywhere I go it's all women.
I think any parent that doesn't read as stereotypically female
Yeah, like I think that's, they would stand out more, even in somewhere like Brighton. Like I went to a playgroup yesterday and like, you know, if we went together, no one would really even notice we were probably two mums because there's just so many bloody women with their babies. Like we're probably just like, hey,
yeah. Oh, that's so true.
Friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in terms of disabled access, they always have to put ramps down for buggies. So actually it makes it quite more accessible than, it's almost like, I find it kind of interesting because like when you have a baby, it's like they're like this mini disabled person. They get their own like toilet, they get their own changing space, yeah. And they get ramps down everywhere. And
it's like, do not always get their own toilet? Bad thing. The changing space is in the disabled toilet.
Oh, yeah.
She says, as a person much aggrieved by that.
Ooh, yeah.
After years of a disabled person without a baby.
What if somebody needs to change their baby and a disabled person needs to use the toilet at the same time?
Mm. That's a big question.
The disabled person has the right of way.
There we go. You heard it here first. That's the order of priority. That's how it goes. You can change your baby's nappy on the floor. It's fine.
I mean, really, if you go to some really good places, they have a separate changing room to a disabled lady.
They do.
One of the things my dad was telling me about, like his experience when like me and my sister were kids, was like if he was the one at the playground or if he was the one picking us up from school, apparently he would get comments like, oh, so you're babysitting today. And he'd be like, no, not babysitting, like parenting. Yeah. And it was really interesting because he was like kind of like telling me these stories of like weird comments that he would get, and he was like, that was probably like my first and only experience of like sexism as a man.
Yeah.
And it's
so deep.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes feel a bit funny if we go to places together, but more that was when he was younger. Mm-hmm. Because you were breastfeeding.
Mm. Yeah, so we
it's kind of like ruins the illusion.
So we did NCT, and I think the one time you felt a bit outside was one of the first meetups we had, like after we'd all had our babies, and we were all like, just all the mums were sat there, pretty much breastfeeding in this cafe, and talking about birth and the birth experiences and breastfeeding and their breastfeeding experiences, and then I think you just felt quite like left out.
Yeah, the conversation was also a lot about like, oh, does your baby look like you or your partner?
Mm.
And that kind of thing.
And that's all right, you can say it looks like me.
Yeah, no, he does very much look like you. Spitting image. Really, he looks like Claudia's brother?
I don't have a brother.
Claudia does not have a brother, no.
Spooky.
My imaginary brother.
Her imaginary brother.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but I don't know, just because all the women are like sat around breastfeeding, holding a baby, and I'm there like.
Mm. But then,
but
as they get older, the babies get older, and birth isn't such a like fresh experience for everybody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Got more things to talk about.
Yeah.
Moves on to other stuff. Yeah. What they're doing.
Sleep regressions normally is like the main point of topic, isn't it?
Yeah, actually,
the next one. Thank God.
I was going to ask about the sleep stuff because Jessica, you mentioned about like needing 8 hours. Are you still able to get 8 hours? Like, is that something that you've like managed as?
I'm deaf. Yeah. I'm deaf.
You can sleep through it.
You're just like, I'm fast asleep.
A fire alarm.
Yeah, wonderful.
I'm good.
Yeah.
He used to sleep in our room, and the only thing that would wake me would be like Claudia moving so much in the bed as so she kind of
picking him up
and feeding him and putting him back down and feeding him and picking him up. But now he sleeps in his own room. And you get woken up by the monitor, but
yeah. I think because Jessica has chronic fatigue, plus she's the one who's still working, and I'm the one who's breastfeeding. It was never like a question that I would just do all the nights. Mm-hmm. Like I know some parents like to do like, oh, you can sometimes do the nights, or, you know, my partner does the night feeds with a bottle or whatever. That was never our plan anyway, was it? No.
Yeah.
So she's still managed to get her 8 hours sleep pretty much.
Also, if I did a night, I would just be useless for the next 3-4 days.
Yeah.
And then it's like, was that really worth it? Because then I'm not parenting. And not doing 50% of the parenting for 3-4 days, she's doing 100%. So,
but what was really helpful was in the first 8 weeks that you took off, because you weren't working, I would do all the night, and you know, when they're that little, they're pretty much feeding all the time. And then Jessica would get up at like 6 a.m., whenever it was, when he kind of woke up as such, and then take him downstairs for a couple of hours between a feed, and I'd have like a good 2 hour proper sleep.
Oh, I do that first week because he was taking a bottle then.
Yeah.
Not that he takes the bottle now. That's why he actually eats food now, so it's very easy to feed him food. But yeah, so to start with, I'd stay up a bit later and you could go to bed earlier.
Yeah, well, I went to bed at the same time as him, which was like really early, wasn't it, after a while?
No, I stayed up with him.
Oh, I can't remember. When things changed so quickly.
What has happened?
But when he was really little, I'd stay up late with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'd go to bed.
Yeah, I'd go to bed at like 8 or something.
And I'd bring him up.
Yeah.
And
wake you up,
give him another feed. We'd all go to sleep.
You'd sleep feed him through the night. Yeah.
And then I'd take him
downstairs. And then when you woke up at 6, or pretty much, actually, I remember, this is right, I remember sitting in bed, like literally Googling whatever the hell I felt like Googling that night, like learning some new thing. I signed up to so many online courses, I mean, I didn't do any of them. But, like, you know, when you're like buzzing at night, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this course.
Oh my God.
And then like, literally, I'd be like, oh my God, it's like, it's 5:30. I can wake her in half an hour. Oh my God, it's 5:45. I can like, wait. And then like 5 to 6, I'm like, okay, come on, get up now, it's your shift.
Time for my sleep. On a like different topic, did you find navigating like the healthcare system in terms of like your fertility and like pregnancy and birth, like all of that, did you find that inclusive as two women? I mean, again, you're in Brighton, so maybe the hospitals there like have good policies around like the language that they use about patients. But I'm just, well, not even patients. That's also like a weird word that some pregnant folks find. Like, I'm not a patient, I'm just pregnant. Yeah. Did you find that inclusive? Like, what kind of like the language that medical staff would use, or like posters around the hospitals and things?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to kind of bear in mind that obviously we were going through this in the middle of COVID. Mm. So there was a lot of extra layers of things where it was like, oh, I couldn't go to appointments because there was COVID. And there was a lot of stuff that was much harder that I think, you know, no one could bring their partner to because COVID. But I think there was like one ultrasound that I definitely, on like the 20 week ultrasound that I remember going to.
Yeah.
And she was very much like, who are you? Came in and I was like, her wife.
Yeah. Best friends coming to ultrasounds together.
Yeah, exactly. I think they thought you were my best friend.
They were kind of almost ready.
It almost felt like they were ready to give you a spiel about only family members were allowed to come in.
Oh my God,
kind of
thing. Only family members.
I mean, I would probably say that being two cis women as well, I wouldn't be able to answer your question fully because I think there were most of the posters, like you say, and things are all very much like women and female and female anatomy and this and that and that. So I don't know how inclusive it would be if maybe you were like,
I didn't
identify as a woman potentially in having a baby.
Yeah.
I do remember kind of picking up slightly on there being some things and being kind of impressed by that. But
yeah.
Again, we live in Brighton, which likes to pride itself as being the gay capital of the UK.
Yeah. I feel like I heard about a hospital that might be somewhere around Brighton where the maternity, or even like, I guess even that word is really gendered as well. But where the kind of like the pregnancy birth part of the hospital has been bringing in policies to make it like gender inclusive.
Yeah,
pregnant
person rather than pregnant women.
That is in general hospital, I believe. Yeah. And yeah, so that kind of got all blown out of proportion by the Daily Mail.
Of course,
they love to do. And what that actually was I think they just had a policy of trying to educate their staff members and say that if people come in and tell you that they're uncomfortable with you using phrases like breastfeeding, there are other phrases you can use,
such as
breastfeeding, like just letting them know there are other phrases you can use.
Yeah.
And the Daily Mail was like, oh my God, the NHS are going to change all of their phrases to everyone. Yeah. And this is the phrase that has to be used for all pregnant people. What? Obviously not the Daily Mail said pregnant people.
Yeah.
We found throughout our pregnancy that we were constantly, like, pregnant people is just such an easy thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why people get upset about that phrase.
Yeah, pregnant and, like, it's one of those ones where, for me, when I'm talking more generally, and, you know, I'm talking about pregnant people more generally, but also, like, I'm a pregnant person, but I'm also a pregnant woman. And so, like, yeah, you know, if you know somebody's gender, then, like, you know, and you know that they're happy to be referred to in a certain way, then, like, that doesn't mean you have to be, like, gender neutral with everybody when it comes to, like, individuals. Okay, yeah, we've got some Instagram questions. Somebody asked, how do you deal with burnout or just lack of energy when parenting? And Jessica specifically, like, finding the balance between being a mother with fatigue and your other conditions.
That's just like silence. It's like, yeah, how do I deal with that?
With the help of my wonderful wife. I think we just lean on each other. Mm-hmm. Like, we just kind of have a thing where if one of us is not up to it, then the other one kind of has to be.
So I mean, I think since I got pregnant, but especially since he's been born, maybe whilst I was pregnant as well, Jessica's like really, like, you've been quite pushing with work.
Yeah.
Because you became a bit like, oh my God, I've got a family to provide for. And, like, you know, and that's become a new motivating factor in her work. But then also that's like a negative as well, because you're burning yourself out and you're getting exhausted, and you mean you can't spend like as much like time with Rupert that you would want to be. Mm. So I'm often having to be like actually like pulling the brakes on her a bit.
Yeah. She kind of just tells me to stop and not do things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to keep reminding her that Rupert's 8 months already, and like you're never going to get this time back, and he like changes so much every day. And yeah, it's great that you're working so much, but also your job can be flexible as well if you want it to be. So I just tell her that she should try and, like, you know,
Chill out a bit.
I feel like I'm seeing into my future, and I'm going to be like saying exactly all of that to Dan at some point down the line. Just be like, they're changing every day. Like, you'll never get this time back.
Exactly.
Somebody asked, what is one thing that you thought would be easy as a disabled parent, or a non-issue that is actually hard? Was there anything that you were like, that'll be fine? And then you're like, wait.
That I thought would be hard. Wait, no, something I thought would be easy, but is actually hard.
Maybe you just know yourself so well that you were like, no, I know exactly how all of these things will affect me.
You know, to be honest, I kind of thought
you definitely thought working with a baby would be easier than it is. Like, you thought you could still fit in quite a lot of work.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you didn't realize how much time.
No, I think I kind of thought that he would
sleep more or something.
I don't know. That was madness. I don't know what was going on there. I was like, yeah, sure, it'll be fine. I can be in the same house as him and be working. No. No, you can't. Hannah, I'm telling you now. It's not a thing. You could be somewhere else.
I mean, you do make it regret, but yeah.
So I did that. I have a lovely office, home mm-hmm. office, that I have set up. And foolishly, it is all of how many meters away from Rupert's main play space?
Yeah, it's next to the kitchen.
Mm, it's like 4 meters away from the space he generally plays in. bad idea.
Is that just because you get distracted and you're just like, I just want to hang out with the baby?
Yeah, she gets distracted. I'm like, oh my God, look at him, he's so cute. So I distract her as well a lot. But also he shouts a lot.
Oh, little miss, he changes so much every day. You'll never get this time back. It's so special and precious. Of course it is. Of course it is. And it's just the other side of the door. 4 meters away from me as I'm trying to work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Don't be... This door's got glass in it. You foolish.
See right through. Foolish. Just like start putting up some like blackout things. Yeah. Over, like, no.
I can see through it. I'm like, oh, you're so cute. What's he doing now?
Oh, bless. And then actually somebody asked as well, back to kind of what we were talking about right at the beginning, do you think that all children should first learn basic sign languages because it's easier than speaking?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Do you not think so?
Yes, only if you pay respect to actual sign language, not if it's learning some kind of made-up sign language.
Like a baby sign thing.
Sign language that is taught by deaf people that is... based in the sign language of your region that is with an awareness of sign language and how it actually works. It isn't just like, here is the sign for milk. Like, I'm going to need you to put some effort in here. I'm going to need face. I'm going to need body. I'm going to need some emotion. Come on now. Give it to me.
From the top, let's go.
Yeah, give me some bit of like history of deaf culture and learning. This is what I want from parents. I don't think it's quite right to just be taking a part of culture because you think it kind of makes parenting a bit easier.
But also from a slight like playing devil's advocate, I think it's a good accessible way for people to maybe get a bit more aware of how useful a tool it is and how it is another actually form of language. And that maybe from communicating that way to their baby, they'll realise that actually it's an aid to communicate to other people who have language impairments
and
or
I think
deafness.
It's a great thing for the child growing up, knowing sign language, like you're saying. And then the child goes to school. They see, oh, there's a kid who is deaf, uses sign language. Brilliant. Maybe they can communicate on the playground with them. Maybe they can make friends. Maybe that child isn't as alone as they might once have been.
Yeah, do you have any...
This
is like the... Was it a BBC interview?
Oh, yeah, when the child comes in.
She's like...
The BBC reporter's child.
Yeah. Are there any resources that we could leave in the show notes that you would like recommend for parents who are thinking about using sign language with their babies?
I have a terrible memory for names, Anna. So I'm going to send them to you.
Perfect.
And you can add in a voice thing where you read them out here.
And we'll definitely put them in the show notes as well. So people can find them linked there. Thank you both so much. It has been so good to chat with you and just lovely to catch up as well. Do you want to remind people where they can find you and all of the good stuff that you make online?
Yep. So you can find me over a YouTube channel, which is Jessica Calgren-Fozard. That's just my name. And you can find many videos with Claudia. You can also find us on Instagram at Jessie and Claude and on my Instagram at Jessica Out of the Closet.
Yeah. And mine is at CloudFoz, all one word.
Lovely.
Oh, it's on TikTok. Forgot about that.
Oh my God, and TikTok. There you go.
TikTok. Really? It's at Jessica Out of the Closet. You could have guessed that.
Oh, love that. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Oh, thanks for having us. Bye.